Our subject today is AIDS, the Church's Role. And I'd like to begin with a meditation, a very brief one, written by someone with AIDS. Why so downcast, my soul? Why do you sigh within me? Put your hope in God. I shall praise him yet, my Savior, my God. At 7 a.m. I awoke and sensed in my half-sleep that the day ahead would be okay. I had slept well and felt rested. When I flipped on the radio to catch the local news, the first thing I heard was the last thing I wanted to hear. A local Catholic priest is dying of AIDS, the broadcaster said. The Reverend Peter Davis has announced to his congregation. That was when the truth finally hit me. It had been several days since my medical problems were diagnosed, days in which I shared the news of my illness with family and friends and members of my congregation. Yet despite the concern I saw in the faces of those special people when they learned about my condition, I still hadn't accepted it myself. Now I felt forced to face it, and I allowed myself to feel the impact of that truth. I was dying of AIDS, and everybody knew it. Somehow, it had not hit me so starkly before that moment. I moped through my morning routine and sat down to read the Psalm of Morning Prayer. Somehow, somewhere, between that radio announcement and the conclusion of my prayer, the veil was lifted. I decided not to be a person dying with AIDS. 20 minutes of that identity was quite enough. Rather, I decided to live with AIDS and to make my life count for something. The moment of decision was a great one. It has sustained me through many dark moments, and I go back to it often. Whenever I begin to think of myself as dying, I remind myself that God calls me to live life instead, with all of its pain and uncertainty, as well as its joy and promise. Pain, uncertainty, joy, and promise. God is using these problems and emotions to teach me how to enter life fully, and I am grateful for this lesson. Thank you, dear Lord, for calling me into the fullness of life. One of the things that we think of, I know that I thought of when I first became involved with working with people with AIDS, I had, up till then, done a lot of experience with death, had a lot of experience with death, dying, grief and loss issues, etc. And so one of the things I needed to learn too was people are living with AIDS, not dying with AIDS. We have so many names. You notice I say persons with AIDS. A lot of people, and you'll find this in a lot of newspapers, they refer to AIDS victims. People with AIDS do not like to be called victims. We don't say cancer victims, heart attack victims, although we may use those expressions once in a while. We don't like to think of people as being victims, but as people. And the persons with AIDS came out of the AIDS community itself. They are first and foremost persons who are living and who are living with the threat of AIDS. Wanted to deal with a couple of issues that were raised yesterday, just briefly. I think I'm not seeing at least one of the people who raised the issue, but I'll bring it up anyway. Is there a spiritual dilemma, is the question, if we're not dealing with homosexuality, or is it the homosexuality that makes AIDS a spiritual dilemma? And I kind of wanted to think about that a little bit. And I was thinking about that last night, thinking, well, that's a very primary issue. We can't avoid that issue. Certainly, that's one of the reasons there is a spiritual dilemma. I think there may be some other ones. they have to do with things that are very mundane, but that are also there with other diseases. Money, for instance. Right? The drug for people with AIDS, in Michigan at least, costs $700 a month. Well, the average person can't pay that price very long. So what happens a lot of times is that the person becomes ultimately dependent on society. And how many people do you want to support with AZT to keep them alive? And then we deal with some of the very complex living and dying issues. But are those issues only with AIDS? No, they're not. Kidney dialysis, for instance, is fantastically expensive. How long do we want to support that? Some drastic treatments that people submit to today. And we'll be talking about medical ethical choices, I think, tomorrow, if I get that changed. But those medical ethical choices also bring a spiritual dilemma. We want to be helpful to people. We want others to be helpful to us. The question that people often ask is, well, where do we draw the line? Like, I'm not a line drawer. I don't like drawing lines. But how do we learn how to serve and serve best? And that does raise spiritual questions. So although I think, my response to the question yesterday, that yes, that homosexuality plays a major role in AIDS, because in this country at this time still, the greatest number of people with AIDS are those in the gay community. But as I said yesterday, and for anyone who is not here, that picture is changing. It's beginning to enter the heterosexual population much more so. Statistics kept in the United States by the Health Department showing that the continuing AIDS, there's a decline in the gay population, because for some time the gay population has been policing itself. And there is an upswing now in the heterosexual population, the IV drug abuser, in the minorities, and in the poor. And there are a lot of reasons for that. And I think as we talk about the church's role, we want to keep in mind that the kind of responses we come up with don't end with people with AIDS, but they're going to come, and we're going to be talking about lots of other issues as well. I'm going to let you do a lot of the talking again this morning. I'm going to start out in your small groups, and that's what we did yesterday. Form small groups. You might want to try to find four different people today if you were here yesterday. If you weren't here yesterday, then try to find people who you don't know really well. Because what we're interested in is exchanging ideas with each other. I think it's very important as a church that we begin to hear each other's ideas. And if those thoughts seem to be hard, I mean, maybe you have to say about yourself, hey, I've really got a bunch of prejudices here. Say that, because that's important to say. And it's important for us to express the truth about ourselves and to begin to talk our way through some of these things if we're going to become the compassionate, caring people that God has called us to be. Maybe what we could do, can I have a good reader read this section from Luke, and then maybe we don't have to distribute Bibles? Somebody got a Bible handy? You want to read? Would you read it for us? Luke 10, verses 25 to 37. As you listen to this reading, try to imagine that Jesus is speaking to you as you try to understand the role you are presently playing or will be called to play in the AIDS crisis. And I say that rather positively when I say will be called. The expectation is that by next year, when I first started out, it was 1990, seemed farther away, that by next year, it is probable that every congregation in the United States will be affected in some way by AIDS. That does not necessarily mean that there will be a person with AIDS in your congregation, although there may very well be, but there may be parents of a person with AIDS. There may be, how do we minister to parents, to family members? I think if we knew each other really well and we began asking questions of each other, we'd find that many people are already affected. There's a lot of silence about this still. Silence in the church. So now, imagine whatever role you are presently playing or will be called to play in the AIDS crisis that Jesus is speaking to you. Imagine that the person in the parable who is stripped, robbed, beaten, and left for dead is a person with AIDS or a close friend or family member or yourself. And then later, there's some questions to respond to. Think about that as you hear the reading.
On one occasion, an expert in the law stood up to test Jesus. "Teacher," he asked, "what must I do to inherit eternal life?" "What is written in the law?" he replied. "How do you read it?" He answered, "Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your strength, and with all your mind, and love your neighbor as yourself." "You have answered correctly," Jesus replied. "Do this, and you will live." But he wanted to justify himself, so he asked Jesus, "And who is my neighbor?" In reply, Jesus said, "A man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho when he fell into the hands of robbers. They stripped him of his clothes, beat him, and went away, leaving him half dead. A priest happened to be going down the same road, and when he saw the man, he passed by on the other side. So too a Levite, when he came to the place and saw him, passed by on the other side. But a Samaritan, as he traveled, came where the man was, and when he saw him, he took pity on him. He went to him and bandaged his wounds, pouring on oil and wine. Then he put the man on his own donkey, took him to an inn, and took care of him. The next day he took out 2 silver coins and gave them to the innkeeper. 'Look after him,' he said, 'and when I return, I will reimburse you for any extra expense you may have.' Which of these 3 do you think was a neighbor to the man who fell into the hands of robbers?" The expert in the law replied, "The one who had mercy on him." Jesus told him, "Go and do likewise."
Thank you very much. Is there someone who wants to share something that happened in your group? Some of the thinking that you heard?
Oh. We don't have anything in our church yet, you know, that is concerned with AIDS, no programs or anything. But we do have it in the community, and we have AIDS, babies with AIDS that are seen on television and are taken up by families because, of course, they don't live very long. And
your community is caring
community
for the babies.
Is, yes. I'm not sure about the church, but community.
Okay, that's an interesting response. Any others?
Well, I think the point of being judgmental here came out quite strong in our group, the idea that who am I to say that this person is. And I think we feel here that there's a great opportunity for the church to come forward with really some strong, I mean, for example, suppose there were a family in our church whose son or daughter had AIDS would come up and they don't want to cost $700 a month to take this. Would it be, you know, I think it would be an ideal opportunity for our church to say, okay, we as a church will accept that responsibility. It's sort of a glass of water to this family then to help them. I think we need to be made alert within the whole church community to do something, be ready to do something.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Someone else?
Well, in our group, one of the persons mentioned that in their county, there was only 6,000 people in the county. And as far as I know so far, there's no currents of AIDS in the county. But there's always a possibility of young people having moved away, coming home again with AIDS, or it was also mentioned that maybe people in the congregation would have nephews and nieces living in other places, or grandchildren, and it's a grief situation, and that support could be given to family members who have others in other places with AIDS, if one day that is known. And maybe a congregation that does not know of any AIDS in the community could at least have material on hand to if nothing else, to prepare for the possible eventuality of AIDS coming locally.
Our church does have that kind of thing, at least informational groups, you know, so we do get some information.
How did you fare on some of the tough questions, like allowing a gay lesbian support group in your use your facilities?
You have any problem?
You don't think you'd have a problem?
I feel certain that ours would not have a problem either. We live in that kind of community, though, where I'll call it a more liberal university-oriented community with a similar congregation.
Okay. What other tough ones did you struggle? Did you struggle with any tough ones? We had some problem over here, I think, with the fear that it might look like the church was condoning. How did anybody else struggle with that issue?
I think that establishing homes where they would live, where they could live together and have their support group and be ministered to in our community would perhaps cause a problem.
You think that might cause a problem? How would you feel about it was next door to you?
I don't know. We kind of experienced that a few years ago when a black family was going to move into our community. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, this is Renton, Washington, where you have Norwegians and Germans and
that's all living
together. And they said, well, it's going to mean the end of our community. This is just one family. The rest will move in. The thing will go downhill. And they said, when are you going to move? Because for sale signs went up all over the area. And I said, well, I guess I'll give them a chance first and see what kind of neighbors they are. And they were lovely people. And they said, well, they're just going to have a mess. And I said, you go down this street and you count the number of places that have garbage dumps for front yards. Mm-hmm. And you look and see what color their skin is. Mm-hmm. It has nothing to do with the color of their skin.
Okay.
So
you are aware that there's more out there than simply the judgmentalism that we sometimes come to issues with, mm-hmm. right? We have preconceived ideas that need to be challenged. We have preconceived notions. But, oh, are they hard to change, right? And what yesterday some of you were here, we talked about fear barrier. And I think these are some of the areas where we might have fear barrier when we say, what would others think of us if we do this? Might they think we're doing this? That's just one issue of many. This is a very complex issue. We can't really cover it in a couple of sessions. So what we can do, and what I'm hoping that we're doing here, is kind of opening the door a little. To think about some of these things. What other issues did you discuss in your group that you'd like to share with us all back here?
Well, one of our, in fact, was myself, I came forward with one of the primary things should be done is a basic education on AIDS. I mean, so many people are just uninformed how AIDS is contacted, and this should be very basic and upfront in our church.
Okay. You think the church deals, I asked that question in our group, do you think the church deals well with the issues surrounding sexuality at any age?
No.
Yeah, I don't either.
That's a sin.
It's a sin. It's a sin to be a sexual being.
The church is guilty. I mean, the church is sinning by refusing to face that.
All right. Now, that's a concept that's probably new to many people, though, that the church is sinning when it refuses to come to grips with this. Hey, how long has the issue of sexuality been around?
A number of years ago, we had a high school class, and the two of the people that are here in our group taught it. And as far as I know, it came out from the Lutheran Church, and I think the title of it was God Has a Better Idea. Mm-hmm. And they were very impressed with the series. As far as I know, it was only taught a couple of years. One of our sons happened to be in the class, and thought it was very good.
May I share your story of what happened in your school?
About
you
the
want
family.
To do that?
We introduced a pastor from Michigan with a parochial school. And in the 60s, we introduced the Concordia Sex Education Series, and so the parents would know what was going to be done. We ran through the initial film strips and that. One of the families pulled the kids out of school because they didn't want them learning that stuff and sent them to the public school. And I talked to the father and I said, you know what they're getting in the public school? No, they're not getting this. Well, I have the close friend of the woman who developed the curriculum for the public school, except they called it health education.
And maybe that's where we went astray, huh? We should have hidden behind a different term. But again, my concept, and can you do with this what you want, but my concept is that the church has too long taught sex issues. You know, thou shalt not commit adultery. What does that mean? It means don't. You know, and that's about it. And if that's all the education you have, where do you get your education?
Sharing,
I don't know.
Ignorance with others is right.
I've never figured out how procreation has continued on if nobody ever talked about it.
No, nobody ever did it either. Right? Yes. But those are issues, and the church needs to come to grips with those issues. And also, I think the issue of homosexuality is something that has not been talked about in the church. It's something we really haven't. And again, there too, what we've done with it is the don't. You know, and we've pulled out a handful of texts. Always when you come to the issue of AIDS, I hear quoted the texts that are anti-homosexual behavior or are perceived to be anti-homosexual behavior. And I have read other interpretations of those same texts. And again, it becomes a whole issue then that needs to be opened up and to be discussed and to be educated on in the church. But when I talk about AIDS, it seems to me that the parable that we began with is more in tune with the issue than arguing whether what somebody else is doing is right or wrong, because it's asking the question, to me it is, you're going out and saying, now, I'm going to help you, but first I want to find out about your behavior. And you know, we mentioned in our group, we don't find that in the story of the Good Samaritan. We don't find this person asking any questions at all. He found a person who's beaten, robbed, stripped, and people with AIDS are certainly that.
I don't remember in this reading of it, but since the way I understand the story, he really politically or whatever should not have paid attention to the beggar at the side of the road. That was not a custom any more than it would be for us to accept someone, help someone who was homosexual, who was different than us. And I think in the story it was probably a condition of someone you wouldn't have been expected to. No one would have condemned you for walking on by.
Yeah.
And yet the priest did.
And he did the unexpected. Jesus always does, right? He turns things upside down and reaches out to help someone that we thought, oh, well, they weren't important. They didn't matter.
But AIDS and all that is that's what we're talking about here today. But I don't think it's just that. It's all the things that we see that we could do to make the world a better place. You see how many people walk by a piece of garbage that anybody could pick up. Any of these things are things that we should take the responsibility for.
Okay, so that as responsible people, that is responding to the love that God has shown to us, we have really no alternative to it than to reach out and share that love with others. So I think our time is up here. Welcome. There's no lunch for another hour yet, as far as I know. So you're welcome to stay on and talk about some of these issues privately if you like. Look at any of these materials out here. And I really thank you for coming. My hope is that we just open up some doors and get us thinking about some issues that perhaps we haven't spent much time with. In our group, we basically have people who they're not confronted with the issue. It isn't there in front of them, right? And perhaps that's true for most everybody in this room at the moment. The question is, will it always be that way? Or will this issue suddenly be there for you? And will we be prepared to deal with ourselves? Because we really have to deal with ourselves in this issue far more even than we have to deal with other people.